Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is part two of my two-part interview with Norm, George Wendt from Cheers. If you missed part one, after you listen to this one, go back, check that out. This week, we talk a lot more about Cheers, his time on Broadway, yeah, lots of interesting stuff. So here again, part two with George Wendt on Hollywood and Levine. What was it like being on a hit TV series for all those years? Boy, that must have really been an experience of a lifetime.
It indeed was. I mean, it's like a nirvana, really. I mean, it's you know, have a role like that, you know, hit and run, you know, sit there the entire time with like some of the, you know, most amazing comedy writers of the era, just giving me the greatest jokes. It was heaven.
I remember when we went back to Boston for the 200th episode and they had a big parade for you guys. And it was like following around the Beatles.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, they said it was as many people as turned out for the Pope and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, you had more Jews show up for the Cheers thing. Were you nervous when Shelley left that the show might not survive?
Not as much as you'd think. I mean, it was a kind of a mind fuck. But at this point, you had to have faith in the writers, because if anyone's going to dig their way out of that, you know, and also, you know, romantic comedy, I'm not telling you, but say perhaps anyone listening, romantic comedy is not an all day sucker. It's boy meets girl, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. And after that, it turns into a domestic comedy. And the boys were not interested in a domestic comedy. And so in a way, you know, I'm sure they would have liked if Shelley stayed. But in a way, the romantic comedy had sort of played itself out. You know, and it was remarkable that you guys were able to keep it alive as you did.
Well, I think adding the character of Rebecca Howe, the Kirstie Alley character, gave us more stories. It gave us some new directions and in a sense was kind of like a shot of adrenaline for the series.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it seemed like the initial intent was another boy meets girl, but you know, Kirstie just, you know, her character, the way she, her take on everything was just a little too whack, you know. You know, it just wasn't the same as Sam and Diane. So it took this other life, which
she was a character. Remember her very first table reading?
Yeah.
She came in a blonde wig to look like Shelley.
Yeah, and I'll never forget her exit in the series finale. I mean, I remember thinking to myself, God, if we were to somehow come back, she would have to be in the loony bin or something. She was so gone.
Yeah, but that's what made her funny. Because when she started, she was kind of a martinet, and it was hard to mine comedy out of that. But once we keyed in to her being funny when she was a mess, then we were able to really write to her. So it's now the middle of the 11th season, and Teddy decides he doesn't want to do the show anymore, and the decision is made to end the show after that season. What were your feelings? Did you feel, it was time, or did you want to go another year or two? What did you think?
There were times in the latter half of it, you know, where I thought, maybe I should try something out, you know, but those quickly passed. So I would have been on board I'd still be on board.
That's the way I felt too. I mean, we wrote 40 episodes of Cheers, and I never got tired writing those characters. I always loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something special about that show.
Yeah.
So for the final episode, we were all in Boston again at the Bull and Finch watching the series finale. And now I got to ask you, a half an hour after the show ended, and we were all upstairs and it was very emotional and everyone was hugging and crying and everything else. So they come to get you guys to go downstairs to the bar to do the Tonight Show with Jay Leno live. And that was an absolute train wreck.
Yeah.
What have you guys were like in no condition emotionally to go on live television for an hour and a half?
Yeah. Emotionally and also chemically, we were in no condition. You know, we were just shit-faced, the lot of us.
Yeah.
It was a two-hour show, as I don't have to remind you. You know, we didn't think to eat, or they didn't really feed us. We were just getting hammered and more hammered and more hammered. And then we thought, oh, yeah, no big, we'll do a bit, you know, with Jay Leno. Not only were we hammered and rude and, you know, like sort of, you know, being, you know, weird. But Jay, frankly, was very green at that moment. I think he was only on the job for a few weeks.
Yeah, I said if Letterman were running that show, it would have gone very differently.
Yeah, or a more experienced Jay or, you know, whatever, Johnny, of course.
Johnny, and, certainly.
Yeah. Not blaming Jay, but it was a bad idea, bad circumstance, bad...
Did you know at the time when you were doing the show that, oh, my God, this is just going off the rails? Or did you guys think you were hilarious?
Well, I think we thought we were attempting to just be ourselves and be, you know, kind of funny and hilarious and entertaining. But, you know, I knew it was like icky because, you know, Jay and his producers were not, they looked like really, they looked beside themselves. They didn't, you know, they weren't rolling with it.
You should have seen the looks upstairs when we were all watching it. And it was like that scene in the movie, The Producers, during Springtime for Hitler, when everyone is just staring dumbfounded.
Yeah.
84 million people watch that show. I don't think that's ever going to happen again.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
So life after Cheers, was it a big adjustment?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I'm still adjusting.
But was it a big letdown? Certainly worked. I checked your IMDb page, and you're listed for like 155 different acting assignments on various shows. So you certainly have worked since Cheers. But still, yeah. What was that like coming down from that?
It sucked, you know, like to go from top of the world, best possible situation to, even if you got work, it'd be like, ooh, everyone's sweating bullets because it's a network run through or the studio's here and everyone's, being a nervous Nelly. And in our day, you guys, protected us from, I wasn't even aware of any presence, Warren Littlefield being around, John Pike would be around, Symes, there'd be, you'd see some suits, but they were like so mellow and easy and just wanted to be part of the gang. There was no adversarial. So that's, it's like you got to do a table read in front of like 200 people. And it's everybody gets a vote about everything. If that was happening during Cheers, I certainly was shielded from that.
Most of the time they let us go, even in the beginning. Although it's interesting, I've told this story before. Brandon Tartikoff, the alum from Second City, said to us at the very beginning, look, you guys are doing great work. Don't listen to notes. Don't listen to different suggestions. Just do what you are doing. And we said, great. And then like 3 weeks later and the numbers came out and he said, what if you change the opening titles? What if you did more, normal opening titles where you see the actors and stuff? So it's like, it's Brandon who gave us the note. But no, for the most part, they pretty much left us alone, which when you think about it, especially in the beginning, when our numbers were dismal, it was perfectly normal for them to panic and want to make mid-course corrections, but they let us alone, which God bless Brandon and NBC and Grant Tinker. And it also helped that they didn't have anything else in development nearly as good as this. So there was really nothing to replace us with.
Yeah, it was a luck of timing in many ways because, Tinker had just been installed as the head of NBC and his mandate was we're going to put what we perceive to be quality programming on the air and leave it there until the audience finds it. And we lucked into that groove.
Because I maintain, and okay, I may be biased, certainly, but I maintained the first year of Cheers is the best. The first year of Cheers I would put up against any season of any other sitcom. And I think when the season ended with Sam and Diane finally kissing, if you remember, the audience went absolutely batshit.
Yeah.
At that moment. And I was standing on the floor and I turned to my partner, David Isaacs, and I said, we've peaked. There's nothing else we can do with these characters that is going to get this kind of reaction. They sleep together, whatever. It's not going to be the same as this. And so like you were saying, it's kind of hard to keep the romantic comedy on again, off again. They're together. They break up. There's a triangle. It's hard to keep that going for 5 years. And I think we pretty much exhausted it.
Do you think is there a moment that we jumped the shark? I wonder.
I remember there was an episode where Rebecca's high school boyfriend comes back, and she always had a crush on him. And the big reveal at the end of the show was that he's gay. And they used Harvey Fierstein.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, how could she not know that he's gay? He's gay. Now, you directed an episode. You directed an episode that David and I wrote. And I'm looking, and it seems to be your only directing credit.
Yeah. It was, I suppose it might have been, something I would have worked harder at but I stayed lucky on the acting side for a while. So it was not a passion of mine.
Well, you did a good job.
Oh, well, thanks. It was quite an experience for the audience. Jim Burrows got ill, pneumonia of all things. And, it was quite sudden. He had to stay off work. And so I was thrown into the breach, and working with the cast was a blast. And but it was a pretty gag heavy show. I mean, there was a brawl with Eddie LeBeck's escapades, former hockey players, guys. And, I didn't know anything about stunt coordinating or what I wanted. Thank God it was such a good team. Also, for fuck's sake, LoFaro, our longtime AD, who could have helped, took a commercial in Japan or something that week. Maybe that's why Burroughs called out sick. it really was upon the camera coordinator, because I just didn't know anything about the cameras. So I spent the whole weekend blocking the show meticulously, and I come in and I've got, okay, A camera, X camera, this, that. And then Bill Fraley, the camera coordinator at the time, calls me over discreetly and said, George, if you've got, a single of so-and-so in X camera, you're going to want the reverse, the opposite shot to be the same size. And I was like, oh. So my notebook worth of blocking moves.
Throw it out the window. All you have to do is make one change in that sequence, and it throws everything off. Yeah,
completely gone. So I learned a lot. And it was funny because I'd go, let's see. Bruce, to this camera operator, Bruce, can you, and he shows me a shot. He like looks at me like, you fucking moron. I'm already on it.
And Jimmy, on the other hand, was so facile in cameras, he wasn't even watching the monitors. He would just be, Vonnie, up the line, you give me a single, set for the door, he's coming around, go with him, do. They knew what he was talking about. He'd block a show in a half an hour, and you were probably there till 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll never forget Jimmy's greatest directions to me were, I'd be sitting there and cameras trying to get, get us over my shoulder out to Ted. And Jimmy would come up behind me and tap me, and he'd whisper, Georgie, left cheek. So I'd shift my weight ever so slightly to clear Sam for the camera. And then he'd go, okay, Georgie, right cheek, right cheek.
Yeah. What was it like giving acting notes to your cast? It's like suddenly you're one of the team and now you're their boss.
Well, they didn't need a whole lot of help. I did come up with one gag, there was a Jimmy-esque touch, was getting a stunt trampoline to have Rebecca leap over the bar.
That was a very funny bit, yeah.
To meet the critic. So it was mainly just, it was a big old bunch of nothing, really. The script was solid and they knew exactly what they were doing. I don't know what year it was, probably like 7 or 8.
Seven, eight, something like that, yeah. Mention Harvey Fierstein, and you went into Broadway replacing him in Hairspray, playing Edna.
Well, it's Harvey's role. We all just rented it, the subsequent Ednas. But it was really, really fun. It was great.
Was Darlene Love in it when you were in it?
Sorry?
Was Darlene Love in it when you were there?
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
She sang two songs to me. On stage.
Wow.
Every 8 shows a week is so fucking great.
Wow.
Yeah, the act one closer and
How long were you in Hairspray?
A little over a year on Broadway. And then I did it a couple other times in Canada, actually.
8 performances a week. It's got to be a grind after a while.
Yeah, but you fall into a rhythm and it feels good. It's like a workout.
And you've done a lot of theater. I know you also did 12 Angry Men. You did Art in London and on Broadway. That's a difficult play. That's just 3 actors on stage talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Never shutting up. Just blah, blah, blah. But it's a little gem. It always works.
Who else was in it when you were on Broadway?
Okay. First, I started in the West End with Stacy Keach and the late David Dukes.
Okay.
And then we did that for about 6 months, and then they offered it to us on Broadway. For some reason, Stacy couldn't do it, and I don't know what happened with Dukes. So I did it on Broadway with Judd Hirsch in Stacy's role and Joe Morton in David Duke's role, the guy who buys the painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I played Fred Molina's role, the Ivan, the guy in the middle between the two.
Yeah, I actually saw it in London, not with you. But as I seem to recall, it's 2 guys talking about a third guy. Were you the third guy?
Well, what it was is it's two guys, lifelong friends. One of them buys a painting that is entirely white on white canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And he pays $350,000 for it. And the crabby guy can't wrap his head around that. So they just argue incessantly. And my character is Ivan. He's sort of the third wheel in this relationship. And he's getting married and is a wreck. He basically, they beat him to a pulp, figuratively.
They're trying to each get you to align with them, I think, right?
Yeah.
And you're also in 12 Angry Men.
Yeah. Yeah. People say, what was your role? And I go, number one. And they go, who's that? I go, the foreman. They go, okay. And I go, okay, Martin Balsam. you know, because that's what they want to know. Who was Henry Fonda? Richard Thomas was Henry Fonda. Who was, you know, Jack Klugman, Jack fucking
and
Warden. I mean, that cast from that movie is like the just the pantheon of
characters. Oh, yeah, great movie. Sidney Lumet directed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's interesting, if you watch the movie, he does something very interesting visually, how the movie starts out and you're pretty much in master shots where you're seeing 12 of them. And then as the movie unfolds, it starts getting closer and closer and closer so that it's way more claustrophobic as the movie goes on.
Wow.
Yeah. Very cool. Really. Here's the other thing. So I started to say, and you did Death of a Salesman.
I did.
Yeah.
That nearly killed me, too. I'll tell
you. That's nearly killed lots of actors. Where did you do that?
I did that in Canada, in Ontario, small theater near Stratford. Actually, it was filled with Stratford cast and director and crew, you know, the designers and everything. So it was a cool production. But honest to God, man, there's another guy that never shuts up.
Right. No, he's got long speeches and boy, emotionally, that guy goes to the ringer.
Yeah. And half the time you're talking to imaginary characters the other people can't see. It's a tough one. And so I was going straight to play Santa Claus and Elf, the musical, at Madison Square Garden, immediately from the Death of a Salesman. And I would stand there in the wing in Death of a Salesman, pooping my pants and just kind of going, get me into those Santa boots now, please. Here I've got this, the greatest, most difficult role in English-speaking language. It's just the opposite of norm, you know, just the easiest role.
On the other hand, good for you for taking the challenge.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So I also want to thank you. During the pandemic, a number of sportscasters, Jason Benetti, who is my most recent guest, and a number of others, we all got together and did a Zoom cheers reading. And you can see it on YouTube. You go to Sports Scene Cheers and you can find it. But we got you to play Norm. What was it like playing Norm again after all this time?
It was fun. I mean, it's Norm is, you know, obviously just me with way better writing. it was pretty easy. But Benetti would crack me up consistently to what a deadpan. Oh my God.
Yeah, that must have been weird playing Cheers with all these other different actors.
Yeah.
playing the part.
Yeah. And, you know, the limitations of Zoom, like the delay on timing.
Right.
Everything was tough.
Right. Well, as the guy who played Man Who Said Sinatra, I thought he came off really well.
Yeah, he had the better role. The late, great Al Rosen.
Al Rosen, yep.
And Phil Perlman, sitting next to him, had to elbow him when it was his cue.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where he was on Mars. And Phil Perlman would elbow him in the ribs and he'd go, Sinatra!
Yeah, and Phil, who kind of became a regular, and we were giving him lines too.
Yeah.
I remember one that we wrote where Lilith says to Sam, she's very downcast, and she said, Sam, what drink would a loser drink? And Sam goes, Phil, what are you drinking? He goes, Manhattan. Sam goes, Manhattan. Well, this has been great. George, thank you so much.
Sure.
And cheers.
Yeah, thank you.
See you soon.
Bye.
And our thanks to Norm, George Wendt from Cheers, who was my guest this week and last week. Again, if you missed last week's episode, now you can go back and check that out. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, to Howard Hoffman, John Wolford, Bruce and Jason Miller. If you'd like to get in touch with me, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is hollywoodlevine@outlook.com. That's hollywoodlevine@outlook.com. I am on Instagram, as is everybody, Hollywood and Levine. And you can find me on Twitter at Ken Levine. Thanks so much for listening. We will join you again next week. Got a great guest. If you are a fan of Mike Nichols, well, there was a great book called Mike Nichols, A Life, that was written by Mark Harris, and Mark will be my guest. That is next week. Come back here.
Hollywood and Levine.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.